live from the mysterious, mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters. You're listening to X and Y on the Fly, the dating podcast, with your hosts, Scott and Emily.
Hello, this is Scott McKay.
And this is Emily McKay.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of The Big Show. I think, Emily, people have probably heard other dating coaches and relationship experts go on and on about how you know when you found the one. In this show, we're going to talk about creative ways to know you found the one. You ready for this?
Oh, I'm so excited about this topic because it's not as simple as saying you'll know when you know. So we're going to talk deeply about knowing why you know this is the right person.
Ah, that key and really, I don't know, kind of confrontational question. Why? Why is this person the right one for you? Well, one of the things I've been talking about lately is how victimhood is characterized by weaponizing statistics. Oh boy, do victims love to weaponize statistics. Statistics are the favored weapon of victims, indeed. Because a lot of people are out there saying, why bother? Why even get married? Because 60% of all marriages end in divorce. Most relationships break up. Most people are crazy or selfish, or they're not going to give me what I want. And so a lot of people who get married probably should never have even entered into any kind of relationship to begin with, even dating, let alone be together. I mean, we've talked on this show before about how we know couples who don't even like each other. So even the mainstream reasons why people should ostensibly know they found the one tend to go by the wayside too, right? We should probably get that out of the way right here at the outset.
That's right. And I like to focus on the 40% that does have it right. What are they doing different that makes things successful? We have to look at what's going right so that we can emulate the same thing and have that same success for ourselves. We don't want to go into a relationship with the idea that this is going to crumble and fall apart eventually. We want to make sure we have the right tools and everything at our disposal to be able to make the right decision, pick the right person, and have that happy ending.
Not to be confused with a disposable relationship.
That's right.
Right, exactly. So, you know, let's enumerate what people usually say when you look this up on Google. You'll find some relationship expert who pretty much is a freelance writer, and they'll say, oh, make sure that you have common values. Make sure that they're your best friend. Make sure you're actually attracted to each other. And then they'll say things like, well, chemistry doesn't matter, and all kinds of other things that are equally strange on the opposite end of the spectrum. But really, all of that seems very vague, doesn't it?
First? Yes. Oh, very vague, very generic. Some people may say that none of that matters. You just simply need to have the sexual chemistry, and the rest of it will work out.
Oh, my goodness. Relationships that are built only on sex fall apart, and I'll tell you why. It's not because sexual attraction doesn't matter. It's just that if sexual attraction is all that matters, show me two people for whom that's the case, and I'll show you two people who were desperate to get laid until they finally found each other. And that's a disaster in the making.
Well, that's because it's not sustainable. I mean, after a while, you know, what else is there left? 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road? You can't have a relationship last that long purely on sex.
Not that you and I don't enjoy pounding each other like rabbits, but it's not what our relationship is founded upon.
Well, the honeymoon stage is practically every day or multiple times a day, whereas you finally get into double digits and it starts to slow down a little bit.
You're talking about the sex?
Yes.
Okay, of course. Well, yeah, I mean, my take on this is when it's built only upon sex, you're likely to drive each other nuts because you're going to start not getting along. You're going to realize you're not quote-unquote soulmates or whatever the buzzword is. You don't even like each other, so the sex is going to be less gratifying because you just are really, really getting sick of each other's crap.
And it starts to get old. It's the same person over and over again without the love.
Right. And, you know, another thing that people say all the time is that you have to have a common destiny. You have to have a common direction in life. And if the two of you start being divergent, well, then you're not going to want to stay together. And God forbid someone finds a partner who they find more sexually attractive after the marriage takes place, then you're in double trouble.
Well, that's why a lot of relationships end up in cheating situations.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're building on just sex, then at least theoretically, I'm not saying this is going to be the case for everybody, but if you find better sex, then all of a sudden your marriage will indeed be disposable, like we were joking about earlier, but this is no joke this time.
Well, here's a great question.
Okay.
What if everything is fantastic? You got fireworks, you got, you know, you match up as far as how you feel and think and whatnot, but the sex is not there.
Oh, I think sex is necessary. I think you have to be sexually compatible. And here's probably the first place we could go with this particular discussion on ways to uniquely and creatively know you found the one. If the sexual compatibility is kind of off the charts compared to any other sex you've had, I think that is one arrow in your quiver, okay, theoretically. If you'll pardon the analogy where I'm still weaponizing things, okay? But if you have that arrow in your quiver, then that is special sex. And usually, Emily, that special sex is more than just physical. It points to more of a genuine connection between the two of you that's different than what you've had with someone else. Otherwise, that sex wouldn't have been so magical.
Unless it's just all, unless it's purely lust, that would be magical.
Well, I mean, shouldn't we know the difference between pure lust and I feel a different kind of connection that seems above and beyond the mere physical?
I think some people confuse those. They can feel very much the same. The emotions are high.
Well, granted, but we're talking about creative ways to know you found the one. If it's pure lust, I think most mature adults would know this doesn't necessarily mean I found the one because I'm lusting after them so hard, right?
Well, I think you will know the difference because if you're lusting for each other and nothing else is matching up, then you know that's lust. Otherwise, if you're matching up in every way possible, well, it's because you match up so well that the connection is so strong.
You know, what you're reminding me of is how when people connect and they really want this relationship to work, then every little coincidence about anything in life is a godsend. Oh my goodness, you like the same dessert I do. You like the same band I do. You and I have the same favorite movie that stars Brad Pitt.
We were both born in the same month.
Yeah, I mean, really, we have the same. Well, I mean, all the people who believe in astrology may cringe at that.
Well, that's true.
But whatever, you're going to find unbelievable serendipity in just about everything that just points to God himself drawing the two of you together. Meanwhile, you could have all those things in common with someone you're not even attracted to in the least and just call it coincidence, write it off, and never think about it twice. But when it's someone you really want the relationship to work with, all of those little coincidences start mattering.
And they're cute and fun. We love having those connections.
Yeah, you know what? Indeed, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what's wrong with that? Nothing.
We like to find things that we have in common.
Anything that drives connection.
Right.
Yeah. Now, here's another example of something creative. I was talking about this with a gentleman on a coaching call the other day, and I thought it was a really fascinating conversation with some depth to it. We don't think about the ramifications of spending the rest of our life with this person. Above and beyond, okay, are they going to hurt me? Are they going to cheat on me? How safe do I feel with this person? We really don't think about day-to-day life in the context of actually truly getting along. And let me elaborate on that by saying we have five senses. Only one of them is visual. If she looks good to us as a guy, we may think, oh my goodness, I want to wife her because she's just so hot. I can't keep my eyes off of her. And you know how I like to talk about God's dirty little trick. For those of you guys and gals who are younger listening to this, I really think that somehow baked into our DNA is this recognition, and yes, that's the word I'm going to use, that as we age, people who are in our milieu, as it were, still are attractive to us.
Yes.
I mean, you're the hottest woman in the world to me, and you're not exactly 22 anymore.
No, definitely not.
When I was 22, I wonder if I would have thought you attractive, and the blunt answer is probably not, because you're not one of me. I would have said, hey, that's a pretty good-looking woman for some guy her age. But I was too busy thinking 22-year-old women were hot that I wasn't getting around to noticing you yet. But now that I'm older, I find that, hey, yeah, you're aging well, but you're also someone who's still beautiful to me. So when I see this person, not only is physically beautiful, but her whole aura, everything about her, from a multi-sensory perspective, is amazingly sexy and attractive to me. That gives me, for lack of a better way to put it, a more holistic view of your beauty and just how sensually pleasing it is to have you around. I mean, Emily, when things stink, we throw them out.
Right.
You need to smell good to me. You need to smell good to me after you haven't taken a shower for a couple days. Your pheromones and your musk.
I never get stinky like that.
Oh, no. I actually like how you smell when you're naturally yourself. You know.
Oh, boy.
Not dirty stinky, but just, you know. Your natural scent to me is very sexy. I'm on record as saying I love listening to you talk. I love your giggles. I love your voice. You have the cutest, most mellifluous voice I've ever heard. I could listen to you read the phone book.
What about those massages?
Oh, yeah, right. You feel good and you know how to touch me in a good way. So all these other sensory experiences are tied into your overall user experience for, well, the rest of your life. Am I on to something?
I think you are. Now, you were mentioning earlier about imagining or envisioning being with someone day to day for years and years on end. And sometimes people have trouble envisioning that. What's that going to be like? Will it be mundane and boring? If it is, how are we going to deal with that? Well, remember when we were first dating and we went on that long trip where there's windshield time and sometimes there was nothing to be said, but just being quiet in the car was relaxing and pleasant.
Find someone you don't have to talk with in order to continue to enjoy their company.
And it doesn't feel awkward.
No, because you get each other.
Right. You totally understand that this is okay to be quiet and we're comfortable because we're not feeling anxious as to, I'm not wondering, what are you thinking? What's on your mind?
Yeah, but if I like you and I'm trying to figure out how you tick, I might ask you questions like that and you might ask me questions like that. It's kind of cute when you're dating.
Yes, but it's not 24/7.
Not 24/7, and it's also not 24 years later. And you still don't know what I'm thinking. If you don't know what's going on inside your significant other's head, you're not connecting. You don't think alike. And that's a hard pill for lots of people to swallow when they're dating, isn't it?
It is. And the maturity is important because you need to be able to find someone who's willing and able to mature together and change together and go in the same direction. Because what we learned in life is you and I are not the same people that we were when we were 25. And then at age 35, we were not the same people as we are today. We are constantly growing and changing, and it's important to find someone. You need to find someone who's capable of growing in a way that both of you grow together, not apart.
Now, on the surface, I'm thinking that's something a lot of other dating experts would indeed talk about when they're discussing how to know you found the one. But in real life, it's occurring to me, I almost never read that. You know, we see people get married at a young age and they get divorced because they've grown apart, right? Well, that's because their frontal lobes weren't fully mature and they weren't done figuring out how they think and what their values are yet. Underrated in that last sentence was the whole idea of knowing what your values are, having an identity, and knowing who the hell you are so you know who the hell you're looking for. Now, I shout that from the rooftops all the time, but I think it's something that's underrepresented in mainstream dating advice in terms of how to know when you found the one. But you have to have someone whose values match up to yours. And that has to have come from soul searching and the maturity to know how to construct your identity based on what it is you truly believe and what you're going to value from there. And if you have the same values, then as you grow and as you evolve, you're likely to, well, evolve along the same trajectory as each other indeed, right?
Well, that would be the equivalent of trying to put a puzzle together in the dark. You know, you can't see the puzzle pieces, so how can you match a puzzle piece to each other?
God, you say that and so many marriages just seem like that's just an amazing analogy. It's just a couple people trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle in the dark. How miserable.
Nothing fits. So you got to be able to know who you are. You got to know your values, like you said. That's the only way you'll know if the person you've found matches up with you. You got to be a puzzle piece together.
It's occurring to me we never talked about how the other person tastes. Maybe we shouldn't go there. Let's just say it has to be pleasurable. There's that other sense we didn't talk about. Anyway, I didn't want to break your concentration.
You broke
like
my concentration.
Like Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction. All right. So, yes, you have this person who you have tested and approved the windshield time with. You can go for miles and miles just enjoying each other's company without it being awkward. You have the wherewithal and, well, the courage to talk to each other about what it is you believe, what you hold dear, as you had the courage to go on that long trip with the windshield time to begin with. There's a lot of courage here in admitting the two of you do or don't actually have long-term potential, isn't there?
Absolutely. Here's another question. So everything is going along great. You get along. Everything's perfect. But every once in a while we argue. Should I be concerned about that?
Well, I'm on record as saying that people who don't ever argue are probably not being honest with each other.
Or they're not carrying conversations together.
Well, haven't you? Aren't you the one who's always brought up the simple fact that if a couple isn't arguing, it probably means someone has the other person under their thumb and they're a controller in that relationship?
Yes, that's true. Either have that or you have somebody or both people just too afraid to talk to each other for fear that things aren't lining up and they may end up not working out.
Fear of loss.
Yes.
Right. Low self-esteem. But I do want to camp on that idea of one person being a control freak. And basically, we don't have free speech in this relationship because it's either my way or the highway. And this other person fears their significant other so much that they dare not say anything. And by the way, that's not gender specific.
Well, that's fear of losing the love, that they might not love me if I feel or think differently.
And of course, the opposite of love is indeed fear. So if the two of you fear each other,
then it's not love.
Exactly.
It's not a match.
Right.
Now, if you are arguing.
Indeed.
It's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's bickering.
Well, it depends. It's the type of arguing. Is it name calling? Is it disrespectful? Or is it a gentle, you know, we have strong feelings, but we're able to talk about it and work them out?
It isn't an ad hominem attack against this person I allegedly value.
Right.
It's simply, you did this. You said you were going to do this. You forgot to do this. Where is this? Why wasn't this done? Didn't you hear me? Why won't you listen? And they go back and forth on that because either they're hangry or they've had enough or this little issue has been festering until it just basically was bottled up to the point of explosion. I think that's all normal humanity. In fact, I would label that honesty with each other.
Yes, because you're going to need that. Because we've been married, what, 17 years? And every marriage is going to encounter bumps and obstacles. And you got to be able to discuss it, even have disagreements and small arguments about it.
Yeah.
But knowing how to deal with that difference or dealing with the argument, how you solve them together, that's when you know you have someone you can work with.
Right. And you just brought up something amazing.
What's that?
A lot of times people will say, all right, well, here's the true acid test on whether you found the one or not. Can you live with this person for the rest of your life? Which is kind of what we've been talking about. But someone else might say, or no, it's actually deeper than that. It's, is this the person you can't live without? And everybody will go, ooh, wow, that's really, really profound. I would say that the underappreciated yardstick would be, is this a person who I'm better off going through life's trials and tribulations with rather than going it alone?
Someone we can stick together with and fight off all the evils that will come our way.
Right. Life happens, whether you're in a happy relationship, a good, solid, well-founded relationship or not, but how are you going to go through those tough times together? That's the question.
Are we a team?
Right. If you found someone who is one of you and they are a team with you, just like you said, then that is a wonderful gauge that you're going to be able to withstand and be resilient against whatever life throws at you because you're stronger together than you are flying solo.
Well, it's those fires that disintegrate those 60% of relationships out there.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly true. Couples will go through a very tragic loss, a very tough setback, and they'll break up because they can't stand the heat together. They'd rather be alone. They're driving each other nuts because of the setback.
Or they don't have the skill sets to know how to deal with that.
Right. And you and I, we're not going to go into details, but we've had some pretty rough things happen, just like most human beings do over the course of nearly two decades, you know. And even though some couples may not admit to it because they're trying to enhance their Facebook highlight reel, and we live in the I'm fine, how are you culture, over the course of 18 years, some seriously rough things can happen, and they do. And you and I have stood in the fire together and become a stronger team because of it.
Resilient.
Resilient. And that's because I'd rather have nobody by my side when something bad happens than you.
That's such a wonderful thought.
Yeah.
I love that.
I saw a little TikTok short the other day, and it was from an animal rights person or someone who is really, really about making sure we adopt dogs and cats from shelters. And it was a little short of a dog and an owner meeting each other for the first time at a shelter. And the brief voiceover was, find someone who looks at you the way this dog looks at its new owner. And the dog was like, oh my goodness, I just love you. Thank you so much for being a part of my life. There's something in that look we give each other. There's a knowing look that couples give each other that even interlopers, bystanders can see. Those two just look at each other like they adore each other. And indeed, when there's cheating going on or there's an intent to cheat, one of the biggest tells is my alleged significant other is looking at someone else the way they should be looking at me. It's something you just feel and sense, isn't it?
It is, exactly. And everybody else can sense it too. People think you can hide those things, but you can't. And it's great to find somebody who does look at you like that, who does admire and appreciates and loves you. And the two of you should want to take care of each other, look up to each other with those admiring eyes.
Yes, exactly. That's mutual respect and adoration and admiration.
So it's not just a matter of what you can do for me and how you're going to make my life wonderful. How can I make your life wonderful?
And this is something that people who see relationships from a purely transactional perspective tend to miss. Yeah, it's a shame. Now, obviously, according to every bit of mainstream advice out there, if they embarrass you in public or they flirt openly or talk about having an affair or compare you to someone else's spouse, all of those behavioral patterns seem obviously to be, I don't know, bad signs that your relationship's in good shape. But that idea of how you look at each other, that's subjective enough that I think it gets lost on people.
Well, it's because there's not a lot of people who do that. It's not a lot of people we can see that as an example from.
Right, exactly. And of course, you know, it has to be said, what gets lost in most dating advice out there is you have to be the kind of person that the person of your dreams is looking for, deserve what you want. Most people are like, well, I'm going to get what I want, and I'm going to find it, and I'm not going to settle for less. But what are you bringing to the table? And indeed, both men and women complain that they keep meeting a bunch of selfish people who only want what they want. Meanwhile, their biggest gripe with them is that other person isn't giving me what I want. So it's a vicious cycle, isn't it?
It is. And those are the things that keep relationships from either happening or they keep them from being successful.
Yes, because it's pure selfishness. And what that blinds you from is the beauty of being in partnership and not being lonely, having someone with you, building a legacy together, and having it be based really honestly, truthfully, on the simple notion that it's better, more blessed, if you will, to give than to receive. It's heartwarming. It is truly something that makes life more worth living, certainly brings more fulfillment to a good, decent person's life, and especially to their heart and mind. And it's what makes your relationship more than the sum of just 1 + 1 = 2.
That's right. So you need to look for someone who, or make sure that you're with someone who has that same ideology of wanting to take care of you, that you want to take care of them. And together, you're going to make one great team.
Yes. Two optimistic, generous people make a great team. The problem with optimistic, generous people is they're also the ones, as we've recorded 100 times, they're the ones who are most susceptible to people who are narcissistic and selfish.
And use them till there's nothing left.
Yeah, there's no settling. There's no, I have a ticking time bomb, biological clock inside of me. You know, you can't marry someone, you can't decide to be with someone for the rest of your life out of desperation. And some people are so short-sighted, they just want a big wedding and throw the party.
They forget the most important part, which is living together after that.
Exactly.
That's a long time to live together just for the one-day event.
Well, that's just raw immaturity, if you ask me. I mean, if it's your second time around after a divorce and you still have that mindset, all I can say is heaven help you. You'll probably never, ever get it.
No.
And that leads us to the final topic I want to address before we close. You know, Emily, you and I talk about the importance of getting each other all the time.
Right.
And it's a bit of an esoteric concept, though, isn't it?
For some, yes.
You can't just pat someone on the back and say, hey, find someone where the two of you just get each other. Right?
Well, because if it was that easy, everybody would do it.
Well, yeah, I do think there are some people who don't understand the importance of it. She has a nice ass and, you know, they have good sex, then that's enough.
As they get we've me that said. Way.
They get me that way, right. We get each other, for sure. We just don't get each other. This, to me, Emily, can be summed up by knowing how the other person thinks. There's no need to call you or me and say, hey, my significant other said this last night. What did they mean by that? You already know what's going on inside that pretty little head of hers. And although this may seem hard to grasp for those who have never experienced it before, you sure know it when you find it. You sit with someone on a first date, and after 10 minutes, it feels like you've known them for 10 years.
Oh, that's a wonderful feeling.
Yes, you're one of me. You think the way I do. Your values are like mine. We're already completing each other's sentences. We're already saying yes and to each other. We're playing improv with each other, and we've known each other for a day and a half. Everything is yes and.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and?
And there's honesty. You don't feel like this person's holding back from you. You don't feel like they're changing the subject or things are getting awkward. No matter what it is you bring up, within reason, they're game to talk about it. And the conversation happens, and there's some depth to it. That's the person who gets you. Anything to add to that?
No, I think we wrapped it up pretty well.
Okay. That's because we get each other, and you agree with me.
I do. I do. I do again.
Yeah, I do too. And I would say I do again.
Yes.
See, she's looking at me like that right now, folks.
I think they can hear it. And there's
that giggle. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ah, I love that giggle. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you want more, please, if you are of the female persuasion, go to scottandemily.com/podcast. And remember, I spell my name weird. It's only with one T. So it's scottandemily.com/podcast. Gentlemen, please go to mountaintoppodcast.com. On either one of those pages, if you're on a desktop, you can click on the red button in the upper right-hand corner to talk to us for free for 25 or 30 minutes. No pressure. We want to know where you're coming from, what's going on in your life, and what is keeping you from getting the right relationship in your life. If this particular episode has inspired you,
give us a call.
And we'll talk to you.
We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. See what we did there? And also, you can get show notes, free downloads at both sites, scottandemily.com/podcast or mountaintoppodcast.com. And we look forward to talking to you.
We do.
And until we talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay.
And this is Emily McKay.
Be good out there.
And have fun.
You've been listening to the X and Y on the Fly Dating Podcast with Scott and Emily McKay. Copyright 2009 by the X and Y Communications Worldwide Media Casting Network. Be sure to listen to Scott and Emily's other podcasts, including The Chick Whisper, Dating Cast, and Online Dating Profile Rating, all found on iTunes or at x-net-media.com. Also, check out Scott and Emily on the web at www.deservewhatyouwant.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the X and Y Communications Worldwide Media Casting Network. Be good and have fun.